And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to your April edition of Spring Football Thoughts, a little recruiting. But Luke, we will finish with some defensive thoughts. As in the last podcast, we went through the offensive side of the ball. This time, I've seen a few practices. You've even been out of practice.
I did. I made it.
And we'll get into the defensive side on this one. So the funny part is I had some people come up to me at these practices, and thank you for all the people who come up and say you listen. It means a lot. But then to hear even me misenunciate some of these towns, like, it's – Luke, I'm trying my best here. And I thought I knew some names and some places of where they're from, and then I'll get the family members that come up to me, and they're like, dude, have you ever left the Twin Cities? And I'm just like, guys, I'm trying. I promise I am. I promise I am, Luke.
Yeah, we should, you know, we should have you pronounce different names in the state. I'm still working on a project that I'm hoping we can debut for the signing day in the future. You know, around kind of my, I don't know if it's my identity on this podcast about mispronouncing names, but when that project is ready, I'm hoping signing day we can use it again. We can test it with Minnesota names. How about that?
I think that's a pretty good idea. How are things for you, Luke?
I'm good, man. I did get to go to a practice. I brought my 5-year-old. I randomly decided, like, my schedule just worked right, and I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go pick up my son from his daycare school, and we're going to go over to practice. And he had some interesting observations, which I'll share as well. But I'm curious to see. I know you're frustrated. You only got to go to 3. I know there was no tackling. I know you haven't seen tackling since the bowl game. But what kind of observations can you provide, at least in the limited stuff you saw? Like, we probably should at least talk, like, hey, Max Brosmer, he seems like a leader.
Yeah, he certainly does. Now, if you want to read all of my in-depth thoughts, that'd be behind the paywall at GopherIllustrated.com. It's $1 for your first month, or it's 50% off right now through the weekend. It's portal season. Basketball just got their first portal commit. Gopher coaches were on the road yesterday seeing transfers. They'll be hosting some transfers here very, very soon. So if you want to get my complete thoughts on all that, head on over to GopherIllustrated.com. But I would say offensively, Luke, I'd be curious if you also agree with this. I think the thing that stood out to me throughout the 3 practices is the quick game. Minnesota is really emphasizing here in the spring a quick passing game. That's to the running backs, which I didn't know was legal in a PJ Fleck offense, or that and the tight ends.
Yes. Now,
I think there's some give and take and why it is that way. But before I get into what my hypothesis is behind that, did you also see that at Saturday when you were there?
I did see. I didn't go on a Saturday. I think it was a Thursday.
Was it?
I think so. It was. Okay. It was the one where was it Hoskins made a really good catch? Someone made a really good catch up the sideline, which I could barely see, but the you could tell from up above and basically the reaction of Daniel House that it was quite the catch. But in general, yes, I immediately noticed the quick game. Hitting the tight end, I immediately noticed Pierce Walsh. Like, he was someone that stood out to me in that practice that I was at. Again, N of one, very small sample size. But he was someone that I was like, oh, he looks the part and kind of looks like he has the hands. The running backs definitely looked the part as well. And the other thing that was important is I thought that they did a good job with the running backs at least stretching the field more horizontally, which I think that they have really struggled to do, or really struggled to make an emphasis. The other thing that I will note is that I did call my dad and I said, Dad, I saw this. Maybe this is what we'll see. Maybe we'll see some more diverse in the offense. I also thought this literally could just be them getting us to talk about something completely harebrained and that they're not going to do. Like, I'm not sure what you can believe.
Yeah, that's the question. I think that also comes back to, when was the last time you can remember? And I've been racking my brain to try and figure out this answer. But the question I'm posed to you, Luke Buer, when was the last time you saw a Gopher quarterback check down the ball?
Oh, that's a
more
good
than,
question.
Say, twice in a season. Because I've watched Max Brosmer throw double-digit checkdowns in these practices, and I'm just not used to watching, because obviously it happens constantly in the NFL, but
yeah.
I can't remember the last time I watched a Gopher quarterback check the ball down. Do you remember? Can you remember a consistent time when that happens?
I was gonna say like maybe Adam Weber, and probably because he was standing really close to me at that practice, and maybe that's why I'm thinking of it. But I kind of remember like during his time, wasn't it Duon Bennett ended up getting a fair number of catches? I don't have any stats to support that, but for some reason I think that in my head. The other one, I don't know if he did or I just thought he should, would be Max Shortel.
Max Shortel, USC legend Max Shortel. Yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good point. Definitely not in the PJ Fleck era, right? Like that's not been something they do much in the Jerry Kill era. It was all like up the sidelines and out, right? They were not checking it down. You know, you can't call this a check down, but whether it was a bubble screen, you know, that's something we see in the PJ Fleck era, but or slip screen. But yeah, no check downs.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd note that. I would just note a lot of passes to C.A. Bengura and Darius Taylor when they were healthy, and I think that's the other thing I've noticed from the spring is, boy, are they banged up again. Now, well, half of the guys that are out are from, like, off-season cleanups. Guys,
that
like
was
Daniel
my question,
Jackson,
yeah.
Daniel Jackson, Darius Green, Aiden Goosby, Marcus Major, the Oklahoma running back transfer that they took. But there's also just a lot of guys banged up. Like Darius got injured again during spring ball and he's not practicing right now. But I guess the solace I take in a lot of this, because I was at the practice yesterday and I think I named it in my head the walking wounded practice, because there's just so many guys out with injuries right now, is you can, and Fleck talked about it afterwards, with the amount of injuries that they have, they're giving the twos and threes a lot of reps. Mm-hmm. And he's at least publicly saying, you know, we're raising the floor. It's something that we didn't have last year, which obviously, and we'll get into that defensively with the lack of floor that they had at places like linebacker and safety. But he's hoping that all these reps for the twos and the threes can help potentially benefit them if they get another injury, you know, vein that goes through this fall. So I think there's been a lot of injuries. I would also say, I don't know really what to take away defensively, to be quite honest with you, Luke, because I never saw, to your point, someone tackle someone.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting to hear what the message has been from the coaches and the players about what changes have they made from Joe Rossi to now Corey Heatherman as the defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hear the word simplify one more time,
no kidding.
I'm just going to go like, fellas, what in the world were you doing last year that you couldn't figure out how to simplify it during the season if it became to that? So there's a lot of things I think that you can take away, but I still think a majority of them are on offense, to me anyway, with the quick game, with Max Brosmer, and to your point, his leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he acts like a veteran quarterback. So what does that mean? It means he gets done with Greg Harbaugh, the OC, and then he'll go over to the running backs to work with them to get on the same page, offensive line, receivers. And it's refreshing to see. I mean, he takes charge. I think Fleck said here in the last month that he's already been named a captain.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I would say, if I don't want to be as positive here, is the receivers have a long way to go. With Daniel Jackson incredibly limited here this spring as he's dealing with offseason cleanup, it hasn't been good at receiver at any of the three practices I've been at. Too many drops,
mm-hmm.
Too much inconsistency. And I feel like I've said that now for 3-4 years, but that's where I'll be incredibly curious to see here now that the transfer portal is open for the spring, if Minnesota tries to find a scholarship to go out and get another transfer receiver, because the two guys that they brought in January, in Jalen Varner and Christian Driver, I never saw Christian Driver practice once. He was injured. And then Jalen Varner in the first practice, I think he broke his wrist while we were there. And then he didn't practice after that. So you bring in two transfers to try to give you a jolt. And then the injuries hit them. And then Daniel Jackson's dealing with things. And then so you're stuck with Elijah Spencer Lamecki Brockington and a bunch of young guys. And it's just, they need playmakers and they need some more, in my opinion here, before they get through the transfer portal.
Yeah. It's interesting on receiver. Like, you're right. There were times they struggled, and then there were times that they made, in the one practice I saw again, really impressive plays. I think it comes down to some of the consistency. Like,
I'm just tired of talking about it with that room.
Yeah.
These last few years, I feel like we have beaten that horse into the ground, and there's nothing left. The bones are even now disintegrated at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even with errant passes last fall from Ethan, which there were plenty.
There were plenty, yeah.
There were also too many drops. Like, my favorite Pro Football Focus statistic from the pass-catching room, you'll remember, Luke, is the pass catchers last fall had as many contested catch wins as they had drops. It was 26 of each. Hmm. That is not a good stat to be tied in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I wouldn't say the ball placement when I was there was the best you'd see, but it's also like, it's there, you got to make the catch. And some of that might be just like building cohesiveness and not getting enough reps. So that I'm hoping and trying to put stock in will go aways. But you're right. It did seem like a spot, but then the other reality is I thought that the tight ends I thought looked pretty good, especially like a Pierce Walsh, like I said.
Yeah, and that's with Nick Kallerup being out.
Yep.
Jameson Gears is dealing with offseason cleanup. So you got to see plenty of Pierce Walsh, who they have high hopes for. I think he's probably a year away from being a serious, serious contributor. But if Jameson Gears can't stay on the field, he's going to have plenty of opportunity as soon as this fall. So it comes down to, can Jameson Gears stay healthy? And can Pierce Walsh continue to kind of, as a redshirt freshman, force his way onto the field? Because to your point, he can do some things with the balls and with the ball in his hands. So it's, I'm trying to think, do you have any more kind of just big picture takeaways from the day you were there?
I thought Dragan looked good.
Yeah. I mean, him and Mark Crawford.
I thought that Hoskins looked good on the punt return.
I'll believe it when I see it with punt return.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
We should talk a little special teams just to say, ladies and gentlemen, Luke Buehr, I was able to interview Minnesota special teams coordinator for the first time in the PJ Fleck era. Can I get a round of applause?
Congratulations.
You got that through. It was unsatisfying if you're someone like me, because I got all these stats ready to go, because I'm thinking to myself, this guy probably knows that I probably have a reputation of I hate the special. Football for 40 years. This is his 40th year at the collegiate or NFL level with special teams. Now, I would imagine he's literally been coaching. Talk to media jackals that have been much, much worse than me. But when I try to figure out what his philosophy is, because historically, or at least in recent years, he's been a lot more aggressive. His special teams have been in the return game, which, great, because Minnesota is a very passive punt return team and their kick return has been an absolute mitigated disaster for years. And so that's where I hit him with, hey, you guys lost 70 yards of field position in the regular season on kick returns. What's got to change? And Luke, I just got like stock answers. And I don't blame him to an extent. I got a lot of, we're going to defer to Coach Fleck. And I'm just like, is this really the way we're going to go, like, first impressions here? But I don't know. Like, I'll believe it when I see it with the return game. To your point, Kristen Hoskins has made some plays in the return game. But when has that translated? When have we seen PJ actually want to line up for a punt return and not just do punt safe?
Yeah.
When have we seen kick return actually make blocks in front of Quentin Redding or Quentin Redding break a tackle? Like, it's been very few and far between. Now, I'm open. It's a new year, new me, new mindset, Luke. I'm feeling, you know, revigorated. Rejuvenated.
Clean slate, you might say.
Absolutely. New year, new me. So right. I would love nothing more than in that opening game against North Carolina, if they can get a return touchdown, because as I also love to remind our listeners and you, Luke Buehr, because you're tired of hearing about it, it's been since 2017 since they had a kick return touchdown, 2018 that Demetrius Douglas one was the last punt return touchdown. The return game stinks, so hopefully Bob Legashevsky can fix that.
All right, so just to wrap this up, I mentioned that I brought my son to this practice. This will be the first practice he went to. He's 5 years old. He honestly probably has more of an affinity for soccer, but you know we're also trying to get him into football as well. He's also really fascinated with the colors of jerseys that teams wear. So if you ask him, for instance, if you tell him that, you know, the Timberwolves are playing the Pistons, his first question is going to be, what color are the Pistons? So we went to the practice and he knows the Gophers. The very first observation is that's just white and maroon. And those helmets are black. We don't have black. So first of all, he's just dumping all over the colors are wrong. So
the 5 year old agrees with the 65 yeah, exactly. year old on the color.
Exactly. He just dumps yeah. on it.
Sounds about right.
And then we started over by the offensive linemen's, you know, we're probably stone's throw away from Daniel House. And you know, before we got there, I'm like, buddy, these guys are pretty big, you know, they're going to push each other around, you know, et cetera. You got to stay close. You know, they could topple over and run into you. So stay close, whatever. I think I kind of scared him. So he wanted to move away. So we went towards the quarterbacks and then he just kept begging for a kick. He wanted so badly to see them kick, but finally, I think Dragan kicked one. I think it was Dragan. I can't remember exactly, but it missed the net and made like that really big boom sound. Right. He was all about that. And then just to wrap up, as we walked away, I asked him, so what do you think of football? He goes, Dad, there's a lot of pushing, but there's no tackling. I said, yes, Ryan Burns agrees with you on that. He saw a lot of pushing, but not a lot of tackling. So you have someone in your corner, Ryan. A lot of pushing.
At least it's a five-year-old. My favorite five-year-old puking the eyelashes himself. So I'm all good with that.
All right. So we probably should also thank Team Dinkytown Real Estate for making this episode possible. So if you have a house that you are going to sell, you might consider working with Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group because, Ryan, a portion of that commission that would go to a realtor is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes to support your favorite squads. Obviously, you know, they've sold a number of homes. They've done it in an efficient manner and gotten top dollar for a number of them. So if you want to support Gopher Athletes, you can go to teamdinkytown.com. Additionally, Ryan, you can call 612-250-8562. Reach out to them today at teamdinkytown.com. Okay, so we should talk a little bit of recruiting, probably. The portal is open. Their tweets are aplenty.
Okay.
Or, I mean, the X's are aplenty. Or what do we call them? Posts? Yeah.
I refuse to call it X. I'm just going to forever call it the Twitter machine. It's going to be Twitter with me until the day I die, probably.
Okay. That's fine. So, if you guys leave, I don't think anybody that is a, I shouldn't say huge surprise, but more like a devastating loss, maybe.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they've had just three guys scholarship-wise as we record this on April 18th hit the portal. Reserve offensive lineman Cade McConnell, who is running with the second team as a third-year guy, he hit the portal. You saw Derek Mister, who was a redshirt freshman, hadn't played. He hit the portal. And I think the most noteworthy one would be Tariq Watson, who played sparingly on defense at times last year as a redshirt freshman at cornerback. You saw him come in when Justin Wally was battling cramps or something like that, and he has also hit the portal. So they haven't lost anyone of, I mean, I don't want to be mean to these kids, but, you know, of true significance, at least for this 2024 team. And I think that speaks to the progress that they've made in NIL. I mean, again, I'm not here to tell you they got buckets and buckets and buckets, but I'm telling you that that match campaign that all you listeners and all you fans were able to participate in with Dinkytown Athletes, I know that it's frustrating at times to not know how specifically Minnesota is doing in NIL, but I would tell you one of the things that you can certainly point to as tangible evidence is the Darius Taylors and the Ja Joiners and the Ariante Urseries, the Max Brosmers, the Daniel Jacksons of the world. They're still here and they can get a lot more money elsewhere, but because Minnesota can make them a competitive offer now, what's the reason to leave? So people are looking for tangible evidence, and I know it's hard to come by in this NIL world now, but I think that's where folks should be applauded, Luke, that when the match campaign happened, a lot of people stepped up, a lot of listeners stepped up, a lot of the people at Gopher Illustrated as well. One of my favorite things over at GI now is, have you seen when we get a troll that buys a subscription to Gopher Illustrated from like an opposing fan base, say Wisconsin?
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk about one of these kids that Minnesota flipped from Wisconsin, who's from Wisconsin,
yeah,
in Torrance Petaway, but they came over and made some troll comment on the message board. And so what my community at Gopher Illustrated does is people will say, for every downvote that this post gets, I will donate to Dinkytown Athlete.
Yeah.
Because we've had this happen, I think, twice or three times now. And one time it was a Notre Dame fan. The other time it was a Wisconsin fan. I may be forgetting one. But the Gopher Illustrated community has raised thousands of dollars.
Yes.
Just because people want to try to troll on my message board and I ain't going to have any part of it. But that's the beauty of NIL. You can have a little fun with it now and again, Luke Buehler.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly encourage people to make wagers with friends and say like, hey, if you lose, I need the receipt that you donated to Dinkytown Athletes.
Right.
I also love during the basketball season, they like guess the number of assists the Gophers will have and people put in money towards that. The way that they've made this and gamified it is really fun. And to your point, we should make mention that they do have a coffee blend out. So for all those people that have said, hey, right, I can't get the beer because I live in Washington or Texas or Washington, D.C. or Vermont or wherever you are, right? Guess what? You can order this coffee. They did it with Folly Coffee Group, and it's a game day blend. You can order it. I've ordered some. I don't even drink coffee, Ryan. So
you drink coffee?
No, I don't.
Oh, you just up naturally ready to go?
I like my water pure.
Stop it.
I do.
I hope somebody is punching the air like I am thinking about how that statement
is. Okay, so I try coffee twice a year, okay? Every year I try it. Every time I hate it. It's just, I don't like it. I don't even like coffee ice cream.
Coffee sucked, but again, I say that as the guy who also doesn't like IPAs, but this Dinkytown Athletes Game Day blend is more of a medium roast, and you can get it whole bean, you can get it ground.
Yeah.
And that's at follycoffee.com. You can see the Dinkytown Athletes Game Day blend there.
But here, did I tell you what I'm going to do? I don't know if I've told you this yet. So, you know, I'm an engineer, right? And I like to just like tinker with stuff in general.
That's normally what engineers do from what I'm told. Yeah.
So I'm going to start making cold brew, but I'm not going to drink it. I'm going to give it to my wife, and based on her feedback, I'm going to tinker on it and see how it goes. So I don't know if I should start a blog about the guy that's making cold brew that doesn't drink it. But yeah, that's my thing that I'm going to do with the Folly Coffee. I also switched my office over to the Folly Coffee. So if you're someone that has a small or medium business, hey, consider seeing if your office will switch to Folly Coffee. It can help out DTA for sure. And the people tell me it's good. I wouldn't know, but they say it's good, Ryan.
From the samples I've had, I'm a fan of it. I'm also just laughing at you, Luke. Just, you're going to start a blog about coffee. This is such a middle-aged man thing where it's, instead of going to therapy, you either start a podcast, which here we are listening, or you're hearing our dulcet tones. Is I'm a 30-something year old. Luke, what are you like?
I'm 36.
30s? Late 30s, yeah. Something like that. Or you start a blog. And Luke, you are going to do both. So I'm proud of you. I'm very proud of you.
And what it might be is it might just be like I document my process on Twitter because I don't actually want to buy another URL. I've got a bunch of them already that I'm not using. So, yeah, we'll see. But transfers, we should get back to transfers. We got totally off task. So you mentioned those. I imagine the Gophers will be active as well, right? You mentioned that maybe wide receiver is a place they could go. I got to imagine they're going to look for a linebacker, you know?
Yeah, so I would say the positions that they'll go after, they need another transfer quarterback scholarship-wise. You can't go into the fall. Even with as good as Drake Lindsey has looked as a true freshman, he's drinking through a fire hose. Now, I'm optimistic on Drake Lindsey maybe a year from now once the water pressure on that hose gets turned down quite a bit, and he starts to really understand the speed of the game, really understand a collegiate offense. But you need to bring in a transfer scholarship quarterback because you're just an ankle turn away from either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman walk-on in Max Shikanjanski. I think in an ideal world to me, I would have Minnesota bring in another transfer running back. Within that is Bryce Williams, one of Luke's favorite players, was removed from the roster, I think, about 3-4 weeks ago. Sounds like, from what I've been told, he's probably just going to be done with football. He's not going to take advantage of that seventh year of COVID eligibility. So with him, I guess, retiring to an extent, you've got Darius Taylor, who's banged up again. You've got, let's see, Marcus Major was banged up. Minnesota's two true freshman running backs were banged up. You just need depth. We learned that last year when it's mid, late October, and we're watching Jordan Newbin get run into the ground as a running back five because they have nobody else. So if the opportunity presents itself, I would take a transfer running back. I think it's an absolute must that you got to find somebody that can help you at the receiver position from the portal this fall, because there's just not enough there yet. Defensively, I know a lot of people are listening or want to know about Jackson Howard. Jackson Howard, the number one player in the state back in 2023, went to LSU, redshirted this past fall, played a little bit in their bowl game, played in three games overall. Minnesota has offered. Minnesota is very interested. I've kind of detailed where things are at on Jackson from what I've been told here on Gopher Illustrated. So if you want to know more, head on over there. I think they take a rush end like Jackson because they need more depth behind Danny Strigaw, which we'll get into here in a minute. I would take another transfer defensive tackle, and I would take a transfer linebacker. Now, that's a lot of wants. I don't know what the need is going to be. I don't know how Minnesota's going to split the list in terms of what are the priorities. I would say it's a must. They have to take another quarterback, a wide receiver for me on offense too, but I think that's kind of where I would expect them to attack things in the portal. Again, if you want to know more names, stuff like that, as things continue to evolve, go for illustrated.com, Luke Buehr.
Yeah. You do an excellent job there. And I do think I have been reading more of your articles. Nice work.
You read what I write now? Who have you become in 2024?
I don't know. I'm just trying to I set goals.
That, you know, it doesn't make me feel good when I ask why, and then you can't give me a reason.
I set goals, and honestly, I try to find the content I think that is going to be good, and then I like to give you feedback. And so far, I haven't had any feedback, so it must be pretty good.
Wow. That's the nicest thing you've said to me now. And how many years have we been doing this podcast?
Long time. Long, long time.
Before we get too mushy, I will touch on a few guys on the high school side of things.
Oh, sure.
I know I got some requests to talk a little bit about that. Their newest commit is from Luke's favorite town here in the state of Minnesota, Andover, which, Luke, aren't you a local legend over there for some of your athletic pursuits?
No, I did not grow up in Andover, but you can continue.
So they got a receiver by the name of Cameron Begali, 6'11". He's
6'11"? That's a tall, lanky receiver.
Can you imagine a 6'11" receiver?
I actually
imagine Nate Wozniak then.
Yeah, I actually played with a guy. I played with a guy in high school that was 6'9" and played receiver. But yeah,
that just throw it up to him. But Cam is only 6 foot even. He runs in 11.0 100 meter. He's very fast. That was last spring. I think the hope would be this spring he gets into the tens. I mean, he can move. He led the state of Minnesota in receiving yards. So I know that locally everybody wants to hear about a kid like that. I mentioned just a couple other guys. Emmanuel Carmo, the number one player in the state for 2025 via 24/7 Sports, which is who I work for. Or if you just want to look at the composite, which aggregates everybody together, Carmo is the number one player. And just about a week ago now, he pulled the trigger on the state of Minnesota. I would say just 2 weeks ago, he was at Ohio State, of which he had an offer from, and he got to meet with Ryan Day in his office. So in case you were wondering how many of those offers were legit, a lot of them came in that January time period. He just met with Ryan Day earlier this month, and now he's going to be a Gopher. So there's obviously a lot of excitement around that. They got their quarterback, who is a former Washington Husky commit.
Yeah, I'm actually familiar. I was familiar with the name.
Yeah, Jackson Colick from one of Luke's favorite former TV shows, Laguna Beach. Luke was a big OC guy, for those who don't know, back in the day. 6 foot four, 225 pounds. I remember watching him throw at camp last summer. I came away impressed from that. I remember writing about it. Someone that was committed to Caleb DeBoer and Ryan Grubb. Ryan Grubb is now the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator, and Caleb DeBoer is at Alabama. Now, Caleb DeBoer did not bring him with to Alabama, so Minnesota was able to get in there, get him committed. And then finally, last one I'll talk about, because I can't remember the last time something like this has happened for football. Minnesota was able to flip a kid from the Badgers who's from Middleton, Wisconsin, a defensive lineman by the name of Torin Pettaway, 6 foot five, 265 pounds. I can't remember the last time Minnesota flipped a Badger commit from Wisconsin to Minnesota. Now, I remember they were able to get Galen Elmore and now more recently here Nathan Roy. So it's always good to see that Minnesota is at least changing their best in some regard with recruiting. With, I'll say again, I just can't remember the last time, and I'm sure somebody can shoot me a message or an email reminding me of the last time something like this happened. But flipping a Badger commit from Wisconsin is a new one for me. But hopefully that's good vibes, I guess, for this 2025 class. I think it's going to be a smaller high school class than normal, but we'll see how it all ends up.
Can you just make a general comment? I know you don't know this answer. No one probably does, like, definitively, but are there kind of, is the priority to recruit the portal more heavily now than high school? And then maybe additionally, is it a strategy to go more high school versus more portal, or is that really not fleshed out yet?
I will say for a place like Minnesota, now every school is different with their philosophy and what they can get. But for the University of Minnesota, my opinion is this. The highest upside guys, the guys that are going to be NFL draft picks, more times than not here at the U of M, they're going to come from the high school ranks. I even think about the two guys that will be drafted this year, Tyler Newbin and Brevin Spanford, both from the high school ranks. You look at the guys that will be drafted next year, the Ariante Ursaries and the Ja Joiners of the world, high school ranks. And that's where, for at least Minnesota, for what they can afford from the portal. And I you know, I've been talking with some people over there this week. It's such a different world for the portal guys, because the portal guys in the spring here are either hitting the portal because their NIL payments from their old school didn't come through, or they weren't the starter. They were a two and they want to be the starter somewhere else. Or maybe they were the three at their old school and they want to be the two at the new school. I'll just say this. It's going to be still high school heavy for Minnesota with this roster, but you also have to change and adapt. So maybe 10 years ago, when the transfer portal wasn't what it was today, where just this week, Luke, I don't know if you saw, but the NCAA passed that you can now transfer unlimited times if you're in good academic standing.
That's fine by me.
I don't necessarily disagree. It's just a lot different of a world than 10 years ago where you had to sit out and then it wasn't guaranteed.
Yeah.
But Minnesota, it's still going to be high school heavy, but that's where you need to plug your holes in the portal.
Yeah.
And that's where you need some backups, you need some depth, you need some guys to push guys. And so we'll see what Minnesota can bring in, because I don't think this is going to be an overnight thing. I still think Minnesota is going to be getting transfer portal commits for probably the next month, because just because the portal closes on April 30th, that just means you can't enter the portal anymore. If you're already in the portal, you can take visits, and technically you don't have to really decide where you're going until the summer semester starts, which I don't know when the U of M's is. I would imagine
it's June sometime.
Yeah. So there's a lot of time in between now and then, but I would still say it's where you want your upside guys from Minnesota. Where are you going to get them? You're going to get them in high school. So that's why Minnesota is going to continue to focus on that. But portal wise, that's where you need to plug your holes, and that's where you need to provide yourself a little bit of depth.
Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Okay, let's get in and talk some defense. Obviously, you got an opportunity to see some things. It's hard to know because you didn't get to see anyone tackle again. But like, let's talk, you know, where we are now today, and probably starting with Winston Delady Boudere. I know how to say this.
The password man himself.
Oh, yeah. I did see that he was on program. Password? Yeah. This is the TV show?
I think it's called Password. I don't watch a lot of live television.
I don't know.
But I know it's a big deal when I have my mother texting me saying, hey, there's a Gopher coach on Password with Jimmy Kimmel. Do you know who he is? And she sends me a picture. I'm like, yeah. Yep, that's the Gophers D-line coach. Is he amazing? A nice fella? Yes, Mom. He's a nice fella. Oh, good. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. But let's talk about his group.
Just to recap from last year, I mean, they weren't good. And they were 10th, I believe, in conference play in points per game allowed at 26. 10th in yards per game allowed, 370. But this is where it really became bad. You look at the run defense, Luke. They were dead last in the conference play. Yes. In both yards per carry and rushing yards allowed, and they were 13th in the Big Ten out of 14 teams last year in pass defense efficiency. So they couldn't stop the run, and they allowed too many big plays. The two things that Joe Rossi defense had been good at prior to last year, and they couldn't do it at all.
Yep.
You know, and we'll get into that through each level of the defense, but to your point, if you're going to start for reasons for optimism, that the 2024 defense will get better with Corey Heatherman, it's going to start up front because Minnesota returns 6 of their 8 guys that were in the rotation last year. You return Ja Joyner, Jalen Logan Redding, Anthony Smith, Danny Strigow, Devin Eastern, Logan Richter. You return a lot of guys to where we're talking about Ja Joyner as a senior, Danny Strigow as a senior, Devin Eastern's in year 4, Jalen Logan Redding's in year 5. Anthony Smith's now in year 3. I mean, you have guys that you're old in the trenches, which is what I always want to be as a Big Ten school. I always want to be, when you get to year 3, year 4, and year 5, that's who should be playing every single week. Now, because of some depth issues, Minnesota always hasn't had that. But they are going to go pass rush-wise as Ja Joyner goes. You know, Joyner last year ranked 5th. Among all pass rushers in the FBS in pass rush win rate, he won 23% of the time when he was pass rushing. Again, that's 5th best in college football. And he had an elite 90 PFF grade. I mean, you saw it in the bowl game where he registered an absurd 11 pressures on the quarterback. I haven't seen a double-digit pressure game in some time. I think the last guy to do it was actually Carter Coughlin. So I think the number one question, Luke, that I get with Ja Joyner is what? What do you think it is? Because it'll be, I think, the 3rd straight year this question has already been asked to me double-digit times by fans.
Will he get more than 3 holding calls in a season?
Ryan, why doesn't Ja Joyner just move to rush end? Folks. I've even talked with some members of the media about this. I don't know. I guess my question to you, Luke, before I tackle that is, why do people think that Ja Joyner isn't on the field a lot in a pass rushing situation? Because to me, if you're asking why doesn't Ja move to rush end, you must think that he's not getting enough pass rush snaps. So why am I missing something here?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't see that as being a strength for him, and especially I don't think it showcases necessarily well for the NFL, which is his ultimate goal. So I don't get that logic, honestly.
Well, I'll remind fans, Ja Joyner led the defensive ends. That's Ja Joyner, Danny Strigow and company. He led them in pass rush snaps last year. So he's out there a ton. And I'll even say this for people. I've seen Ja Joyner working out of a 2-point stance instead of his hand on the ground here this spring. Now, they're going to mix and match things. Ja Joyner's going to be on the field for pass rushing situations. That's a good thing. I think the thing to note here, though, with the defensive line is we saw at 5 technique, which is the defensive end spot, Jalen Logan Redding and Ja Joyner would split time last year. Jalen Logan Redding has worked exclusively inside a defensive tackle this spring, which has been interesting to note. Now, I think some of that's because Minnesota probably feels like they don't have enough depth there, but it's also because Anthony Smith is somebody you can't put back in the bottle. You remember him, played well in the bowl game last year. I think he played about 300 snaps for them. One of the most physically imposing defensive linemen that have played for PJ Fleck in the last 8 years. and he's only a redshirt sophomore right now. So he has to play. He's got a pair with Ja Joyner, and that's where Jalen Logan Redding's gone inside. If you ask me today what I think the starting defensive line would be, I would say Danny Strigow at rush end, Ja Joyner on the other side of defensive end, and then Devin Eastern at one technique, and Jalen Logan Redding at three technique. Now, you can do a lot of things with that. You also can move Devin Eastern to either spot. I'm bullish on him in his second year, really, as a guy. But to me, it comes down to what happens behind Danny Strigow, because I think whoever that next guy is might not be on the roster for 2024. They need to get another guy there, because Lucas Finnessy, who's currently there,
he's
former high school, former high school cornerback, which is funnier than heck to me, because in high school you think high school cornerback.
Yeah.
What is this guy? 5'10", 160? No, he was 6'3", 225, and now he's about 6'3", 245. But injuries just haven't been kind to him. I mean, you remember in the 2022 Iowa game, he got hurt, missed essentially all of last season, and I just haven't seen that burst that I saw pre-injury. Now, could it come back here over the summer? Absolutely, and then I'll eat my own words. But even a guy like Carter Menz from Fargo, North Dakota, formerly the number one player in North Dakota, I believe in the 2023 class, he redshirted last fall. I think he can definitely help Minnesota, but I think he's still a year away from that. He's big, he's long, he's twitchy, he can bend, but he looks like he's about 220 pounds soaking wet, which is tough to get away with in a non-pass rush situation when you're going against Big Ten offensive tackles who are 310 pounds. So when Carter Menz puts on another 15, 20 pounds, you can start to count on him more in this rush end rotation. But I think they need to add another guy from the portal there just to be able to provide some depth. That this is going to be Danny Strigow's last year of eligibility. Like, hopefully Carter Menz is ready by then. Maybe Lucas Finnessy finds a little bit more of that twitch and burst as he continues to get further and further away from his injury. But I want more pass rush, because we saw last year, Ja Joyner had 46 pressures, Luke. Okay, that was team lead. The next closest was at 21 from Danny Strigow. It's essentially Ja Joyner, and then you don't know what you're going to get consistently. So that's where I would almost say I'm really hoping Danny Strigow, now in his third year in the rotation, second year as the full-time starter, can really benefit from what all the attention that Ja Joyner is going to see. Because Ja Joyner is going to be seeing double teams. He's going to be seeing tight ends chip him, running backs chip him. He is going to be the focal point on passing downs that opposing offensive coordinators are going to know where number 17 is. Well, that means Danny Strigow is going to get one-on-ones. That means Anthony Smith's going to get one-on-ones. That means Devin Eastern, Danny Strigow, one-on-ones. And you got to be able to take advantage of those. So I guess this is me saying I'm just hoping that Danny Strigow can find more of a pass rush here. He's been a good all-around player for this team. He had a 71 PFF grade last year, which is an above-average one, and I'll take that all the time. But I think pass rush for me, Luke, is an area of emphasis with the defensive ends. Then I want to see if they can get something more from somebody not named Ja Joyner. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. You need to have effective play from multiple positions, really, not just defensive line, but especially on the defensive line. You can't have, you know, focusing double teams in one location and effectively having a legal holding on Ja Joyner all game. But, you know,
yeah, one day that'll be called, Luke. And I've asked Ja Joyner about that a couple times, and he just kind of shakes his head, smiles, and say, I can't control it.
Yep,
you know, for it is sure. What it is. And I get that.
Yeah.
But I also look at that defensive tackle spot where I mentioned earlier, Devin Eastern, the Shakopee former four-star. I think he's had a good spring. I think he's going to be Minnesota's best defensive tackle. It looks like Jalen Logan Redding is going to get a lot more reps inside there. So you got a year four and a year five guy. Logan Richter would be the next guy up there, and I feel like he's been here forever.
I mean, didn't he gray shirt?
Yes, he did, which in this day and age, I haven't talked about a gray shirt now since Logan Richter in the Minnesota program anyway. But he's in his sixth year, his final year, and he's I think for Viking fans out there, I would say this. Who is Logan Richter? He's like a Pat Williams type, where He's going to clog the A gap, and then that's all you're going to get. And there's value in that, certainly, especially against bigger running teams. But you need to find somebody else there, because we've also seen guys like Nate Becker, a former walk-on from Maple Grove. He's getting quite a few reps. You're seeing some younger guys like Theo Randall, Martin Owusu get reps. I just think that, like I talked about earlier, I think a transfer defensive tackle that can make an impact in the rotation is something I would seriously consider. Now, you also have Darnell Jeffries, hopefully, that'll be back by this summer. He's someone that hasn't practiced a ton, the former Clemson transfer. He's expected to be part of the rotation there, but I haven't seen it with my own two eyes. If I've learned anything this spring, I figured out, Luke, that I'm in year 13 of now covering this football program, which I feel very old.
You're a teenager.
Like a lot of things in my life now. But I think what I take away from spring more so this year than in any other year is if I don't see with my own two eyes, you know, the people who are around it every day, you know, they see it and they tell me. I've heard too many things, and then my eyes don't, you know, it doesn't pass the sniff test. So until I can see some things from some of these guys, I'm going to be a little bit skeptical at times. But in theory, Luke, defensive line should be an area where they should be able to hold the line of scrimmage, and they shouldn't be getting run over like they were last year at times, because you return a lot of guys, and we're talking about a lot of gentlemen that are year 4, 5, 6, and even 7 in this program.
Yeah, you want to have that maturation. You know, what does PJ say? Like physically, emotionally, spiritually. I don't know.
Emotionally, spiritually, mentally.
Yeah, we want that maturation all around, and hopefully, we have it now in that defensive line room. Right. So, a spot I'm interested to talk about. Obviously, Cody Lindenberg was injured much of last year. And maybe didn't play as much as people anticipated. The hope is that he'll be healthy this year. We can never guarantee that.
He was healthy
that.
Every single practice I saw on spring ball. That's a good start for him.
That's a good start. But beyond that, it becomes a little bit more fuzzy for me as to where are we going to get contributions, and who's going to play, you know, meaningful minutes or meaningful snaps for at the linebacker spot for these Gophers.
I mean, that's a great question, but I would say first and foremost, this linebacker room starts with Cody Lindenberg, bar none. I mean, Cody Lindenberg is the best player. I would argue a healthy Cody Lindenberg on this 2024 defense is the best player, and it's not close. And I think Jod Joyner's really good. I mean, Jod Joyner's going to be – I mean, I said it about Ariante Ursary on the offensive side of this podcast. I'll say it about Jod Joyner on the defensive side. Jod Joyner is going to be a top 100 draft pick 12 months from now. He is too good of a pass rusher. He's already in year 5. Yes, he has another year of eligibility in 2025, but if he has another year like he did last year, he should go get NFL checks instead of Dinky Town Athletes checks. But Cody Lindenberg is going to be the guy after that, where he is so gifted. I mean, his ability to run sideline to sideline, he is the one with Corey Heatherman, the new defensive coordinator. You'll remember, folks, that one of the new rule changes this year is the coordinators on both sides of the ball can talk to one player on the offense or defense and get the play in. So for Minnesota's offense, it's Greg Harbaugh, the offensive coordinator. He's talking to Max Brosmer. Now, when it gets to be 15 seconds on the play clock, then all communication sits in the headset. So they can talk to them up until 15 seconds left in the play clock. And who does Corey Heatherman relay the play into? Well, it's Cody Lindenberg. Yes, I know he has to stay healthy. I know that you know that. Cody Lindenberg knows that. We've asked Cody Lindenberg about it. He's doing everything he can stretching-wise. I mean, everything he can. And I just hope that he can put it together this year and get to a season like last year, or in 2022, I should say, where he played over almost 500 snaps. I would love to see double-digit games from Cody Lindenberg this year, because he is a very gifted linebacker. I mean, I think he's has the potential to be Jack Gibbons-esque. I mean, he's a different kind of player than Jack Gibbons was.
Sure.
Jack Gibbons is now starting for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, a Kamal Martin type of impact. We've seen some good Gopher linebackers over the years, but I think Cody has a chance to be even better than that, but he has to stay healthy. So to your question, okay, Cody Lindenberg, and then what? I mean, that's a question I have for myself. I'll tell you that there are about four or five guys that are competing for that role. I'll start with Maverick Baranowski, someone that we saw glimpses of last year. I mean, you saw him get a lot of the starting reps when Cody was out at Mike linebacker. Him and Devin Williams were Mike and Will. Both of them dealt with injuries throughout the season as well. There's been a lot of talk from coaches here this spring about what you know, with the progress that Mav has made in year three. Devin Williams is obviously another one, started games for Minnesota last fall. He didn't practice at all this spring. So I'm going to be curious to see. He was injured, recovering from offseason cleanup surgery. I'll be curious to see how he fits in, because the two other guys that are really competing in there are Matt Kingsbury and Tyler Stolsky. Now, Tyler Stolsky is someone that you saw start the bowl game, number 44, former walk-on from the state of Michigan. Played at times last year, but I wouldn't say he's the most athletically gifted of the linebackers we're talking about, but an incredibly smart player. And that's something that I think defensive coordinators and the head coach certainly value. Matt Kingsbury was unfortunately the guy that Purdue picked on in that first half, where they had a lot of success going up and down the field. I would say Matt Kingsbury in year two now as a redshirt freshman looks noticeably slimmer. Looks like he, I wouldn't say necessarily lost any weight, but he looks more put together, and he already was a big gentleman at 6'2 plus and 240. So it's tough for me to get too far down the rabbit hole, Luke, because you've heard me say it once, you've heard me say it twice. I'm going to say it for a third or fourth time. Linebacker especially is a position where you need to be able to watch it live. What do I mean by live? 11 on 11 full go tackling. I need to be able to see if they can shed a block. I need to be able to see if they can make the tackle in space. And that's where, without seeing it with my own two eyes, I don't know really what to give in terms of a dissertation of where the linebacker position is at. But I think with the amount of guys that they have returning that played significantly last year, I mean, the only guy you lose is Ryan Seelig, and I would argue it really didn't go well for him. We saw too many inconsistencies from Ryan Seelig last fall. But the hope would be whoever that next guy is, whether alongside Cody Lindenberg, between Maverick Baranowski, Devin Williams, Matt Kingsbury, or Tyler Stolsky, they're a guy that can provide consistency and even flash some playmaking ability at that linebacker spot.
One thing I just want to highlight, just statistically speaking, just to reemphasize how important Cody Lindenberg is. You know, in four games, Cody Lindenberg had 3.5 tackles for loss, right? The next linebacker, well, I shouldn't say next, but the top tackle for loss linebacker was Maverick Baranowski with 5 tackles for loss in 10 games, right? Mm-hmm. That's just the one way you can quantify how important he is. But you need some of these guys to make jumps there. To your point, and I agree with you, you can't really measure a linebacker unless you see them play real football, because it's one, it's so instinctual, and one, it's so physical.
100%. And that's where they have a new position coach in Corey Heatherman. Like I talked about earlier, I think they're going to try to add a transfer linebacker to the room to continue to push the competition, to push the depth in that room. You know, we'll see if even some other guys like Joey Gerlach, who we saw play quite a bit in the bowl game, from Woodbury there, potentially earn a role as the Sam linebacker. But it's just so tough for me to say too much other than these guys look like they run around fine, but you know, I don't know if they can shed a block any better. I don't know if they take better angles of pursuit. I don't know if they can make a tackle in open space compared to what I saw last year.
Yeah.
That's where, again, I'm hoping in fall camp I can see at least a little bit of that, but knowing PJ Fleck, not a chance.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the safeties to start, right? Obviously you lose Tyler Newbin. As good as he was, I'm going to say this, this might be a blessing in disguise from a scheme perspective, because I thought they tried pretty hard to put him in positions to make plays and be instinctual, and that burned them a few times.
I think you're right. I mean, there was, I think, too many times where it looked like and as good of a player as Tyler Newman was, which I don't want to discredit him. He's about to be a top 50 overall draft pick here.
And deservedly so.
I mean, Lee is the all-time leader in interceptions. But at times last year, it felt like they were letting him freelance a little bit too much back there at the safety position. And so it'll be interesting to see whoever does win that free safety job between Coleman Bryson, Kerry Brown. We'll see if Coy Parrish, when he gets here this summer, maybe he can potentially push those two, even though I'm not as bullish as some other people are on Coy Parrish, at least in the short term. I think he's going to be a great safety, folks. Don't get me wrong. He is all what he's hyped up to be. He's very ballyhooed. I just think for a kid who wasn't here in the spring, to be able to just assimilate immediately in during the summer and win a starting spot for a competent Big Ten program, that's really tough to do. But to your point, there's a lot of unknown. I mean, if there is my biggest question with this 2024 Minnesota Gopher defense is this. Can they cover anyone in the middle of the field? And that's the linebackers and that's the safeties.
Yeah, they got exposed. Because
linebackers not cover enough. They would get lost in their zone drops. They wouldn't cover guys enough in their man coverage. We'd see gaps between the safety and linebacker. I mean, that Illinois final drive is going to give me nightmares with linebackers carrying an all Big Ten slot 25 yards down the field to a safety who wasn't deep enough. But it comes down to can they cover anybody? And I don't know what to tell you at the safety position because, you know, we talk about guys like Darius Green and Aiden Goosby. Both guys started games for Minnesota at strong safety last year. They missed the entire spring where they were limited because of offseason cleanups from last fall. And so that meant you were looking at guys at strong safety like Kerry Brown, who was the safety that started the bowl game. You know, we saw a lot of Garrison Monroe from Shakopee as a redshirt freshman, but I think a lot of the expectation comes down to Coleman Bryson, the 2022 Pinstripe Bowl MVP, and then Kerry Brown, who started the bowl game for Minnesota as a true freshman last in Detroit there, now as a redshirt freshman. I mean, it comes down to who is going to be the playmaker, who is going to provide consistency, who is going to win these jobs. Because at free safety, like I mentioned, it's going to be either Coleman Bryson or Kerry Brown from what the reps I saw with my own eyes, from the people I've talked with behind the scenes there. Again, outside chance of Coy Parrish, but more likely than not, it's going to be Bryson or Brown. And then at strong safety, is it going to be Green? Is it going to be Aiden Goosby? Is it going to be the TCU transfer, Jayonte McMillan, who I've heard very positive things about here this spring? I don't know. And that's where, again, with safety, I want to see if they can fill, you know, coming downhill, make a tackle in open space. I want to see if they can carry, you know, a receiver all the way across the middle of the field. And we just don't see enough of that when the media is there for me to make an accurate assumption that I know that they can cover somebody or not. And so that's where it's going to come down to with the free and strong safety spots. These positions are still very much open going into the summer.
Yeah.
It's a good Fleck would tell you, Luke, that every spot is open going into the summer.
Of course.
Because if I've heard it once, I've heard it now 8 years in a row. PJ Fleck loves to say positions aren't won in the spring. You put yourself in a position to win them in the spring, but then you have to go out in fall camp and really get it. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with that line of thinking, but it also comes down to what are you going to learn once all these guys are healthy that you don't already know about them, I guess. And what I mean by that is you know what each guy's perceived strengths and weaknesses are from either the limited game reps you've seen of them or what you've seen in practice. You kind of think, and I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this. Each has strengths and weaknesses, just like any player does, but how do you get them? Who is going to be the most consistent, I think, is going to be the guy that plays on Saturdays, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely think in the end, the consistency is going to matter more than the flash. And I think that's part of the blessing and the curse. Like, I love Tyler Newman. He was a phenomenal player. But I think in some ways, they tried to cater too much to his strengths and put him in a position that compromised him at times, right? And so the consistency was lost, and we saw some of those explosive plays. You know, as much as you hate hearing the simplify the system, that maybe could result in fewer explosive plays, right? And when I say explosive plays for the offense, that should be the number one priority. Yes,
for
exactly.
this goal for defense, limit the explosive plays, just like Joe Rossi loved to do. And when his defenses were good and Minnesota's defenses were good, you saw opposing offenses have to go 8, 10, 12, 14 plays down the field to score points. And we saw way too often last fall, 4 plays, 75 yards, 6 plays, 75 yards.
Yep.
It's limiting these explosive plays, and Danny Collins is going to have quite a bit of work to do here, because you have a lot of young guys. I mean, we're talking about Coleman Bryson's a sophomore, Kerry Brown's a redshirt freshman, Garrison Monroe, he's a redshirt freshman, Coy Parrish, he'll be a true freshman. Aiden Gooseby, sophomore, Darius Green's going into year 4. Like, you have a lot of younger guys, and as we've seen throughout college football, even a young Tyler Newbin. A young Tyler Newbin took plenty of lumps in those early years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might be another year for the safety room where there's going to be some lumps, but you're hoping that you can see them make a few more plays and get a little bit more consistent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about corner. And we should probably throw Jack Henderson. What are we saying Jack Henderson's a nickel, or is he we didn't talk about him at all, but
yeah, he's included in the nickel spot.
All right, let's call him a nickel. So let's go, you know, corners and nickel. Obviously, Wally, Jack Henderson's back. I think this is a group that I think last year we had a lot of questions, and this now almost feels like a strength of the defense.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about them being able to cover people on the outside. Now, I talked about, I don't know if they can cover anybody over the middle, but on the outside, you got Justin Wally, who has nearly 2,000 snaps at the Big Ten level. And then on the other side of him is going to be Ethan Robinson, a transfer from Bucknell, who almost has 2,000 snaps at the FCS level. And then you have Jack Henderson, who will be your early down nickel, who has over 2,000 snaps at the Division I level between the Big Ten and Southeastern Louisiana. So you're going to be starting guys that have played a lot of football. Now, if we're just going to stick with the nickel spot, when Jack Henderson was banged up and he was recovering from some things, we saw a lot of Craig McDonald there, the local kid, formerly at Iowa State, formerly at Auburn, got cleared halfway through the year last year. Craig McDonald is going to be working there with Jack Henderson at nickel. I haven't seen too much of him at either free or strong safety. Don't ask me why. I'm just telling you, Craig McDonald has played a ton in the slot here this spring. But I think the guy that everybody wants to know about is Ethan Robinson, because he's going to be filling the shoes of Trey Jones, who was Minnesota's one-year transfer that they took from, I think it was Elon, if I remember my Carolina universities right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Played a lot for Minnesota. I remember him having the interception against Nebraska. I think Ethan Robinson is better from what I've seen. Now, they're different players, but Ethan Robinson was someone who was first-team All-Patriot League last fall, someone that had extensive transfer portal options, offers from places like USC coming out of the portal back in the winter, was graded as the top-graded corner via Pro Football Focus in the Patriot League. No corner in that conference broke up more passes last year than Ethan Robinson. And I think the other thing that I would note here is he led all Patriot League corners last fall in defensive stops, a.k.a. a tackle that constitutes a failure for the offense, which to me, if I want to simplify that even more, tackles in open space, tackles behind the line of scrimmage. So he was good in the open field, he was a sound tackler, and he was making plays on the ball. Now, if you can get Justin Wally to kind of find, how would you characterize Justin Wally's 2023?
Crampy.
And yeah, that's true.
He had the cramps, I mean, and then he had like flashes of brilliance, and then like flashes of, huh?
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, I thought he was fine. I thought he was above average, but I was hoping to see that jump in year 3 as the guy last year. And we saw it in moments, we saw it in flashes, certainly, but we didn't see it consistent enough. And certainly the last time we saw him was in that bowl game.
Oh yeah, the bowl game was tough.
Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he had a tough bowl game, which again, recency bias is a thing.
Yeah.
But I want to see if maybe Ethan Robinson being alongside of him can get Justin Wally in his final year of eligibility here at Minnesota to really be a lockdown corner. Because if you can have Wally and Robinson cover, I'll tell you this much. You know, when I've asked around about defensive coordinator Corey Heatherman, the number one word people keep bringing up to me from his time at James Madison calling plays, at the University of Maine calling plays, is the word blitz. So if you're going to be sending five or six guys, what does that tell you, Luke? That tells you there's going to be man coverage through, especially on the outside with your corners. And if they can cover, boy, I mean, that just changes the complexion of the defense, where if you're going to struggle to get pressure and you actually can blitz a little bit and you can trust your corners on the outside to cover, I mean, that's such a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So Wally and Robinson, like we talked about earlier, we saw Tariq Watson hit the portal, which means there's going to be a lot more on the plates of redshirt freshman Zaquan Bryan and then Rylan Kelly, a redshirt sophomore. Now, Rylan Kelly, he should be the first guy off the bus for that corner room. There is no better looking corner in this program than what Rylan Kelly looks like physically. 6'2", very long. He can run. He's very raw still coming from Canada. I mean, he played at Clearwater Academy. He's a Canadian native, and it's just about technique and consistency with him. And if they can find that for him, I mean, he can certainly help them this fall. Zaquan Bryan, you saw him make some plays against Wisconsin and in the bowl game. He's going to have a lot more on his plate this fall too. And I think the thing I would also note is, what do they do at on passing downs in the nickel? Because we talked about Jack Henderson, we've talked about Craig McDonald. You know, hear me out on this one, okay? Now, I didn't see this with my own two eyes this spring, and this is just me spitballing. But what if on passing downs you move Justin Wally inside, put Zaquan Bryan on the outside, or Rylan Kelly with Ethan Robinson, and then that's your trio. And that's who you have covering in the slot.
Yeah, I definitely don't hate it. I think Wally is probably your most versatile corner. And you know, he was getting beat on double moves often from the slot. You can get double moves there too, but he wasn't often
getting beat on double moves.
Now, no, I should say when beat
against Northwestern, he certainly did.
Yeah, that and then the bowl game, and so that's recency bias partly there. Yep. But I shouldn't say often. That's a very good. I appreciate you calling that out. When he was beat, it was beat for a real explosive play. It was a double move. It wasn't like he was out of position otherwise normally.
Or if you're not open to that, here's a potential idea. Koi Parrish is your passing down nickel.
Hmm.
I haven't seen him,
so it's hard to say. But yeah.
Well, and again, I want to see how Koi Parrish moves against other Big Ten athletes. But obviously, winning the MVP of the All American Bowl, like you knew he could do it against the competition up in Esco. But as he got better as the week went on down in San Antonio, like I want to. How do I want to say this? Like, expectations for Koi Parrish, I feel like, are very, very high for 2024, and I don't agree with that because I feel like that's unrealistic. Now, in 2025 and 2026, 2027, those are totally different things. But why wouldn't the expectation realistically for Koi Parrish be he gets a niche role, and if he does well in that, then you put a little bit more on his plate. But I don't want to fill up his plate and then he not finish it, and then it just doesn't go well here in 2024. So that's where I'm also spitballing. What about Koi Parrish comes in and is your passing down nickel? Now, that's still a role that's going to play 200-300 snaps in against quality competition. It allows Koi to get his feet wet. It allows Koi to really understand this specific role. And then in 2025, he can potentially slide back to either free or strong. But I'm just spitballing ideas because, like I said, the number one thing I want to see from this defense, can they cover anybody in the middle of the field? And I think Koi Parrish can certainly potentially help that with a niche role, something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I always like your analogy of just, you know, giving them something, see if they can be successful, and then giving them a little more. I mean, that's effectively like growing into any position, right? Whether that's on the football field or in a job or just in life in general. So I'm curious to see. I don't hate the idea. I just have never seen him outside of a bowl game all-star game, and I put little stock into all-star games. I just don't know how it translates, right? It's such a short window. But yeah, I'm still very high and hopeful on him as well. I just don't know what kind of reasonable expectation I should have. So I'm going to keep it pretty low for now.
Or it could be Sahir Ranier, another well-regarded true freshman safety. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just trying to say I am very open to ideas in passing situations in that nickel spot.
I think the good thing that we're talking about is that we have options. That, I think, is the good thing.
Well, you have options. Are they great options or are they bad options or are they somewhere in between? I have no idea. I mean, I can say I think they, compared to last year, I think they're better options. I think that's true. But I think there's just so many question marks on that back end in the middle of the field that you just have to find answers to. And I wish I had the answers. I wish I could convey them to you, the listener, and to the people of Gopher Illustrated. But when I don't have the answer, how can I expect to convey that to people? And that's one of the answers we're likely not going to know until that North Carolina game comes and goes.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know that we got anything else. I think the important takeaways are there wasn't a lot of tackling. You probably should try my cold brew. And then you should go buy a house or sell your house with Dinkytown Real Estate Group. I think that's really the takeaways, right? I don't know if there's anything better you can add to that.
Well, I would say become a member of Gopher Illustrated.
Oh, yeah.
Get 50% off through the weekend. Or if you don't want to commit to a year, it's $1 for your first month. And I think between the basketball portal, the football portal, the football high school side of things, you're going to want to be on the message boards of Gopher Illustrated. So gopherillustrated.com/join.
Yeah, I do need to make sure that I call out here. I got my email recently from Folly Coffee, you know, on the game day blend for DTA, and I used Apple Pay, and I was like, oh, I'm going to send one to my sister. So I did that. Well, I actually sent all of them to my sister. So my sister is going to get a lot of coffee. So I need to go buy some more.
You know, I would call you Chip Scoggins with the way that you screwed up at transaction, but Chip has never bought anything in his life online because he is Chip Scoggins of all people.
I heard that on your podcast, and
it's so true, Luke. I mean, there's just things I can't make up about Chip. He is one of the best sports writers, or just writers in general, that you'll come across.
Yeah,
but he never drinks coffee. He doesn't have a calendar.
It
was so funny. We looked at him the other day, and we went, Chip, where do you keep all your appointments? And he gets this smug look on his face and he starts tapping his temple saying, it's all up here. How do you do that?
I just want to know, like, does Chip understand? Does he use a credit card at all, or like a debit card at
all? He'll use a credit card in person. He has never made a credit card transaction online because he does not trust the internet.
He
doesn't know how, and he doesn't care to learn how.
Okay. But
he lives life in a certain way, and I'm not here to tell you it's the wrong way.
Ryan,
it's Scoggins' way, and he's made it now, I think, 51 or 52 years.
He understands. I guess maybe we don't need to go down this rabbit hole. We've really divested. There's a terminal that he slides, there's a card reader that he slides his card into, and that also basically goes on the internet.
Luke, trust me when I say it's not worth spending some brain power over. I understand what you're trying to hint at. I'm just telling you, this is his line of thinking. I love the man dearly, but he is certainly set in his ways.
Okay. Does he know about card skimmers? You should ask him if he knows about cards.
I'll ask him that next time I see him.
Does he trust the chip? Like, I'm so confused right now.
I hope so, considering it's his first name.
Okay.
We're really divulging. I'm being my own.
Can we agree, though, that I'm going to make some cold brew? I'm going to bring it over to your house, and you can bring it to the Pear and the Spare guys, and then we can get some more feedback?
I don't know that I want to do your homemade. Why can't I just like make some hot coffee?
Well, okay, I can heat up the cold brew. Generative AI is teaching me about
if
this.
If you are this adamant about me trying your cold brew, we can figure something out.
All right, cool.
You know, if that's going to happen, I want to actually get over to your place for these wonderful handmade brick oven pizzas you keep telling me about too.
Oh yeah, that too. Okay. That's when we'll exchange the cold brew and we'll have you for pizza. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. Go get your game day blend from Folly Coffee. Support DTA, support Ryan on Gopher Illustrated. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.